107.2 FM.
Radio Reverb.
Hey everybody, this is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM. This is our March show, and of course March is the month of International Women's Day. And I've got the lovely Helen Packham here with me today. We've just been reminiscing about the amazing event that we did together as a live broadcast at the Brighton Dome 2 years ago, Helen. Can you imagine?
Can't believe it was 2 years ago, just before the world went into lockdown. Absolutely incredible day.
Yeah, and I remember coming to pick you up and we went together, and I think both of us had in our heads that it would be, we'd be in a little room somewhere in the Brighton Dome, and that, you know, we'd do it nice and quietly like we did in the studio. And then we walked in and the whole of the Brighton Dome was just heaving with people.
Yeah, we were right in the thick of it, weren't we, with our microphones and everything being queued up, music being queued up, live interviews, live on the radio with some incredible women. So, I can't believe that was 2 years ago, and here we are today.
What was lovely was that the event was all based around 100 firsts. So it was showing all the women that had achieved something for the first time. And they'd taken portraits of them, hadn't they, up in the dome?
Yeah, that was amazing. So great to see. Really, really amazing pictures and very inspiring stories, seeing all those women and what they'd achieved as well. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it was fantastic. But I have to say, it was a little bit stressful, wasn't it? Going into the dome and there was all these people, and neither of us had done live events before. So this month's show, we're going to talk about stress. We're going to talk about burnout. And we're obviously going to talk about that in the workplace. And I think stress and burnout can sneak up on us, and it has a big impact on our health, our relationships, and has lots of other impacts. So we've got a lovely guest today who I will introduce in a little bit, Helen Thompson, who has got a very positive story to share, but her personal story and her experience of burnout, stress and anxiety in the workplace, I think it's really important to share that openly, and that we need to start talking about these things. Now we've got two Helens in the room here. So Helen P, I'm going to just ask you openly, have you struggled with stress, burnout? Have you got any experience of that in the workplace?
Yes. I guess obviously the workplace looks different to me now. When I was actually in the corporate environment, I did experience quite a lot of stress. I think most notably when I came back from maternity leave and my job went down to 3 days a week, but there was still a full-time job to do. And of course, I wanted to take that on. I wanted to show that I could do it. And when I was doing those things, it means I didn't save. It was too much and the work piled on. And how it showed itself was actually in making mistakes at that point. Yeah. Because I was in a mindset that I could do it and be a mum and all of those, the new things that were happening. Plus at that time, I had an anxiety disorder as well. So taking it all on board, not putting up my hand, not asking for help, not being honest with my boss. And then I literally drowned underneath the work, and then the mistakes started happening. Yeah. And of course, when that happened, it was the Gollum effect. We hear the Gollum effect is when we behave in a certain way that forms beliefs that we have about ourselves, that comes across in how we behave towards others, and then they believe that about us. And so it's a negative loop. And that was what was happening with me. And in the end, I actually ran away from that career because my belief system was so corroded. I thought that I wasn't good enough. I couldn't do it anymore. I had to stand up in front of the executives and things like that. And I was drowning in fear every day. So I gave myself no option but to run away.
Okay. So when you say you ran away, did you literally just leave the job? Did you resign?
No, I literally did actually run out of the office one day after having a huge panic attack. I had a performance review in the canteen with my boss. We weren't in a quiet room. We were in the canteen. And she was really open about my performance and how I wasn't doing well. And I had a huge panic attack and I literally ran out. ran out of the office, ran into a phone box, crouched down on the floor. Yeah. Started crying. Yeah. It was a proper moment. And that was when it kind of dawned on me that I wasn't really handling anything very, very well, and something needed to be done. And I would say I ran away from my career. I did then end up doing it properly and formally, of course. And I worked there for another few months. However, I had exited, I'd left the building in my mind. And of course, it was a really good thing for me to do. But when I look back now, I think I was running away. I was running away.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's quite a classic thing to do. Well, running away, denial, all of those things. I remember, funnily enough, when I was in the corporate environment, I was going through quite a stressful time, and we had been running a really, really big project. And the company that I was working for, this project, the customer didn't pay. And we were talking a lot of money, And my boss was going, they haven't paid. And I was like, you know, doing everything I could to get this payment to come in, and went on holiday for a week. I'd booked a holiday. And before I left, I was convinced it would all be sorted. I'd come back and it would all be done. And I remember walking in the morning after having this week off. And literally my boss rang me immediately and said, they haven't paid. What's going on? And just feeling completely out of control. And I remember just crying, and it was awful because didn't really know what to do. And it can affect you so physically, can't it? To, you know, and the lack of confidence from it.
That's what I said. When it feels like it eroded, it erodes your confidence. Even though your confidence is always inside, since I've since learnt, it's something that you can tap into. It doesn't diminish. It's always there. You know, it feels like, you know, whatever external thing that's happening, it's that erosion, and with that is the erosion of a resilience, positive mindset, energy levels, coping mechanisms, all of that sort of thing. Until you really don't feel like you're able to cope with much at all.
Yeah,
but there is, there is comeback from that.
Absolutely, and I mean, your experience now. Obviously, we were both talking about being employed then, but subsequently we've both ended up being self-employed and working for ourselves and going into the world of entrepreneurship. And, you know, my focus has always been on health. So I've had an experience of helping lots of people that have struggled with stress, burnout, anxiety, and seeing them, you know, turning up, wanting to fix their bodies, but don't necessarily always think about their mind. Tell us a little bit about your sort of entrepreneurship, your self-employed experiences, because I know you've struggled a little bit at times with that as well.
I have. So when I left the corporate world, I went on a proper journey of self-discovery, which involved lots of coaching and personal development and all of that sort of stuff to get me back up to, you know, where I needed to be, to reduce the anxiety, to overcome that fear that I had. And so I was kind of guns blazing when I launched this particular business. There was one before that, we won't talk about it, it flopped, but this particular business, I was guns blazing. I was feeling in peak confidence, and the way it kind of organically grew was brilliant. And then quite a few big life events happened in one go. My marriage ended, I lost my dad, and I had quite a big health scare, all in the space of a year. And that really did have an impact, but I didn't realize how much of an impact it had because I kept going. And I heard people say it to me, you've got to take some time, particularly with grief. But I didn't, because I couldn't. You know, I think it was 2 weeks after my dad's funeral, I put on a conference in Brighton. I was really focused on that, and actually it was really helping me. But I think it was a couple of months after that, things just really took a dive. And as I say, I didn't realize it at the time, but keeping going through all of that emotional upheaval and not taking the time to process, or I just felt like I couldn't, because I'm self-employed. I couldn't stop. I couldn't take paid time out. It just wasn't an option. So I really, really did burn out. And burnout in that instance was actually depression, which I hadn't ever experienced, not properly. Right. And so that just hit me like a ton of bricks. And the road out of that has been a really quite a long one, actually, but a very interesting one. And I think that's like burnout can be lots of different things. It can happen for lots of different reasons. And that was obviously a very different type of burnout to the one I experienced in the corporate world. But when you run your own business and you feel like that, you don't want to show up. You don't want to be visible. You don't want to be professional. You don't want to, you know, have a face, a public persona. You just want to hide. And that's very, very difficult when you've got to win clients and earn money.
It's really hard, isn't it? And I know I've been through periods of time where I haven't wanted to be visible, and I've wanted to go run away and hide. And I also think sometimes when, I mean, obviously we're talking about working for yourself here, but being able to ask for help when you're in that situation, it feels extremely vulnerable.
Oh, it's so hard.
And also not knowing who to talk to, who to turn to, who to talk to.
Because you don't want to be a burden, or you don't want to show that you're not coping. Or also, when you're feeling like that, you don't even want to talk to anybody. you just want to isolate yourself. You don't want to connect with people.
Yeah.
But obviously that therein lies the problem, is identifying that if you're feeling like that, then absolutely reaching out and connecting is the best thing that you can do.
It really is. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the tips, is to, when you don't feel like you want to talk to somebody, that's actually the time that you do need to go and talk to somebody.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's understanding the warning signs.
Mm.
Because when this happened, I worked through it. I actually went to counselling after my dad died and really worked through it. And then it kind of happened again.
Yeah.
So I could then second time around see the warning signs.
Yes.
And put things in place to not go down slippery slope. So it's identifying what those are for you, and for everybody it's different.
Yeah, very different.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
So I'm going to bring Helen in now. So Helen Thompson, thank you so much for coming on the show and for being willing to share, you know, some of your story with us, because I think it's really important that we do share our stories, especially when it comes to stress, burnout in the workplace and how that all works. Just give us a little bit of a background of what happened to you. Where did it all start?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. I worked in the police in London, where I was a detective. Now, from my very first department in CID, we were overworked, understaffed, and it pretty much went on. You would move departments, and for the following 7 years, I just moved from a department that was overworked, understaffed, to another team that was desperately overworked and understaffed, to another team, until I worked in a domestic violence unit, which had huge stresses outside of the excitement of CID. And because of the major pressures and the potential for high risk, there was the added pressures and stresses there. I actually worked with quite a few parents in our very short, small team. And I know that if something happened, if someone was arrested, you just had to drop everything and deal with it. And because I was single at the time, I would just say, fine, okay, you go home to your family, I'll take it on. I was earning overtime, so, you know, that was great. I got to go on some fantastic holidays as a result of that. So great, yay, thanks. But it did mean that twice a week, I was getting probably 3 hours sleep. So it really started building up. Yes, there was the stress. My sleep started suffering. And I started getting to a point that I knew that I just needed a break. As much as I was passionate about what I was doing, I really needed a break. So I chose to go to a different department that was proactive. And again, it was fun. It was exciting. But after doing really well in that role, I was cherry picked to go into another department that was really struggling. So back to busy, got a backlog of workload, and pretty much overnight at one point we had a workload. Robberies in our area went up by 50% overnight. Our staff, our team didn't increase, and so the pressure was on. We were already overworked. And initially it was very much, you know, we were working as a team, but in that sort of environment, mistakes are going to be made, things are going to be missed. You cannot possibly, in that sort of situation, get everything right. Now, I did have a manager at the time who, if we were under pressure, he was under pressure as well, and he started micromanaging. He had his own stresses and so had chosen to micromanage me because he picked up on a mistake I'd made. And it really went from there. Now, from a detective's perspective, I know that if you want to find, if you're looking for something, you're looking for evidence of something, you're going to find it to the exclusion of everything else. So for me, I was being, everything pointed out to me that I was doing wrong. And I knew I was stressed. At the time, my stress relief or my coping mechanism was sport. I played a lot of sport, and that kept me going, and my team kept me going, and all was well to a point. I got injured, so I wasn't able to play sport anymore. So my major stress relief was gone. So stress was through the roof. I was being micromanaged, being shouted at because things weren't going right. And I did seek help. Unfortunately, the help that was supposedly there wasn't actually very helpful. So I went to occupational health and they said, yeah, this is going on. We can't help you.
Oh.
Exactly. And I went to our union rep who said, well, if only you were stronger.
Wow. Okay. Gosh, if only you were stronger.
If only I wasn't so weak. Okay. And I went to some other managers saying, hey, look, this workload is ridiculous. We were in detective training school, we were told that you shouldn't really have more than 21 crimes on the go at a time because you just can't cope with it.
No.
And that's not including any cases that are at trial. Mm-hmm. And I had 30 at one point. So obviously there's no way that you could deal with all of those. And so I went someone else for some help. And again, they came back saying, well, if only you were better. It's obviously because you're useless or you're not very good or something like that. I did have some support of a manager who then was moved off to another team. So for me, all of the avenues of support that I thought I had were disappearing. They weren't there. I was told that I was being too negative and I wasn't allowed to talk about it in the office. Low morale in the office was my fault because I was talking about what was going on for me. And so I did. I stopped talking about it. So all of the things that you would say, you know, get support, go to occupational health, go to union, do some exercise, all those sorts of things, they were all gone. So I had no coping mechanisms. And ultimately, I ended up going off sick because my body stopped working.
Yeah, I bet it did.
I remember sitting in a canteen at one point and my eyes were blurry. I couldn't see properly. And I was feeling dizzy. And I thought, well, I'll have a cup of tea and it'll go away.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And it went on for a couple of days. So I had to go off sick for a couple of weeks. Again, even off sick, the pressure was, you've got this workload. You've got to come back in and deal with it. You've got to go to court. You've got to do all these things. So I needed to be off sick because I needed the time out. But I was being told I had to come back in again. Now, to cut a long story short, during all this, it made me really question whether or not I really wanted to be in the police. Now, I'd done my SARTATS exams and all sorts. So up to that point, I was completely committed. But I started questioning what I wanted. So I then retrained and I thoroughly threw myself into the personal development world. And I can't tell you how many courses I've done and all the different things that I learned as a result of it. Now, I did a similar thing to Helen in the sense of I didn't actually physically run out of the room, but I was about to apply for a career break because I needed some time away and everything everything that I was trying wasn't working. So I knew I needed some time out, and I didn't have enough leave left. So I thought I'll take a career break. And I was told it would take 3 months to apply for a career break, but I knew I could quit in a month. So instead of taking a career break, I quit. I handed my notice in.
Wow.
And in hindsight, I could have looked back and there are different things I could have done. But when you're in the thick of all of the stress and everything going on, you're just not rational or reasonable. You can't think straight. You do make mistakes and you do make rash decisions that you wouldn't necessarily make. And I suffered with post-traumatic stress for a long time after that. But what it did do is it really encouraged me to look at stress, our bodies, how we're thinking, all of those sorts of things. And it just made me so passionate about helping other people to not have to go through the stresses I went through and see what I could do to change the help that's available. So that's pretty much what led to me being here. I mean, I'm a mum now, so there's a whole new set of challenges there. And as you said, that the cycle goes round. So I know being a mum, there's the pressure of where you've got to do it all your own and you can't reach out for help and all of these things. And I noticed I was starting to go down that pattern again. I thought, right, okay, what help is available? I want it all.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because both you and Helen, you know, talking about those times of wanting to flee, it's classic fight and flight, isn't it? Flight or freeze is the classic adrenaline, cortisol, those hormones come into your body and that's what they're there for. It's the natural human process is that the limbic brain, the emotional brain goes, right, you're not safe. So we're going to flood you with these hormones that will help you to get out of the situation you're in. It's physically and emotionally, what was the most noticeable things that came out with the stress? Was it the physical? Was it the mental? What were the feelings?
I know for me, it actually, to start with, it had to be the physical because I'm a strong, confident woman and I can deal with everything. I was used to working hard and just getting on with it. So in my head, I was fine, I could do this, but it actually took for my body to say stop. I know I couldn't, I had chronic indigestion. I couldn't eat or drink anything, even a cup of tea, without experiencing the pain. My hair started falling out and headaches and the sensations in my body. So my body said no first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was my mind for me first, actually, in mood and forgetting things and making mistakes and not feeling clear-headed, not feeling able to cope. And as I say, now I have clarity on those sorts of things. I can spot them a lot easier, but when you're in it, it's very hard to be alert to the fact that these are signs. Whereas I just, you know, I thought I was just feeling overwhelmed. I think feeling overwhelmed is also, you know, is a sign. I mean, you can't manage anything other than a few things or, you know, a couple of days ahead of you and the thought of planning something weeks in advance is just too much. Those sorts of things were where it all sort of started for me.
Yeah.
And then it manifested in my body after that.
Afterwards. It's interesting, isn't it? It's sort of that feeling like your head cannot possibly take any more in. That if you have one more thing to think about. And I think silly things like having to write things down, having to write those lists. And then even when you've got the list in front of you and you still forget.
Yeah.
That is just a little message that's knocking on your window to go, I think you need to stop and I think you need to pause.
Yes.
But I think this is the difficult thing for most people is stopping, pausing, allowing yourself to just be. I know for me that's something that I really struggle with, to stop.
I mean, you know, it's hard when you've got children and you know, you've got a house to keep tidy and meals to cook and a business to run or work to go to. It's difficult to do that, especially when you're not used to doing it as well. When you are a person that gets things done, which I think people who are more like that have more of a tendency to burn out because it sort of touches the type A on the edge of the seat type person. I don't really like sitting down and doing nothing. So if you are that way inclined, it's harder to just stop and do nothing.
Yeah. And I think with the stopping and doing nothing, that can feel so difficult because when you say stop, do nothing, it feels like that has to be such a big thing and a long period of time. But the stop or the pause can literally be as much as just press that button and take a deep breath. That can help you just as much as taking the day off, taking a week off, taking a month off, if it becomes something that we're used to doing. And I think it'd be really interesting to talk about, you know, where we are now after the pandemic, the fact that we're still doing quite a lot of stuff online. We're recording this show online. And I know a lot of people, when the pandemic hit and we went into lockdown and they were working from home, there was a lot of messages about, oh, it's been great. I've been out for a walk this morning, which I would normally be commuting, and spending more time with the kids. And it feels like I've got so much more time. And now you look at the work situation, and I'm talking to people that are getting up in the morning and they are literally logging on as soon as they have got out of bed because they can. And there is no morning walk, morning breakfast, lunch with the kids, time like that, because we've now got into this way of working. We are connected 24/7, 365 days a year. You can work from home, you can work wherever you like. Do you both feel that we're going to see more challenges with overworking, stress, burnout, anxiety in the workplace?
Absolutely. I can definitely see that there's even, I mean, domestic violence and toxic relationships is one of the signs that you're stressed and overworked and or overwhelmed. And you already see on the news that the reports of abuse is up, and that's a sign of stress. So, you know, most of these people are working and have got jobs, and if they're, you know, that they're hardworking, let's get stuck in. And from the last couple of years, when, you know, we've going out has been a challenge, or you know that you've got this workload to do and you've got your computer in front of you, I think stress is going to be a huge factor for the years to come. Mm-hmm. And the potential for the stress to develop into trauma.
Mm. I agree. And obviously I'm working with a lot of leaders, corporate leaders, who they've gone, what's happening is it's a hybrid now. So maybe they might do one day a week in the office, or even maybe 2 days a month in the office. Some organizations are completely 100% home, working from home still. And what I'm hearing, and I feel it too. I mean, I have worked from home for a long time, but I'm really kind of feeling now is the blurs between work and home life can very, very easily be swayed in the wrong direction. It's very easy to not stick to a routine of every morning I'm going to go out and do some exercise and walk to work around my block. And then, you know, we start very well with these intentions, but it's very easy to just slip. And then what we're finding is people are working even longer because of the way of the nature of the work and what they have to do. And the communication is harder. So obviously I specialize in verbal communication and communication between teams. And it's much more difficult for people to communicate with each other effectively, virtually. So that adds to stress, miscommunication. I'm seeing a lot more conflict because people can't have the water cooler chat. You know, like the old, just bump into you in the corridor and have a chat and let's kind of work this out. It's a lot more difficult to have those types of conversations.
Yes.
So that all adds to it.
Yeah. And I think there's that, talking to some of my clients, is they feel if they're not visible in an office, how can they be seen in sort of the hierarchy of things? It's like if they're a manager, they need to prove somehow online that they're working properly and really hard. I mean, I remember when I first moved into a sales role, and I'd been office-based, purely office-based, and then I moved into a sales role where I was out and about. So I was in the car visiting clients and things like that. There was a lot of talk from the office people about the salespeople going, oh, you're just skiving, you're not really working, you're just at the pub all day. And so there was that pressure to be seen to be working. So I would do longer evening work and make sure I was sending emails late at night or weekends and things like that. So I think this whole cultural thing of being seen to be working is going to add to that stress. And I just wanted to touch on culture, because obviously Helen's story in the police, there was obviously a cultural thing in the organisation. And I've been working in the emergency services recently with some clients, and I can definitely see this cultural thing that comes down through the organisation of work harder, work harder, work harder. We've got to get stuff done. It's got to be done now. How do we change that cultural thing, do you think? Tough one, isn't it? Really tough.
It is. I know in the police, there was a rule in the police that you had to have 11 hours between shifts, especially if you were in response. But the culture in CID was you do what you've got to do.
Yes.
Or you leave CID. If you don't like it, leave. So in that sense, there needs to be an awful lot more education and training around what stress is, and that if someone's stressed, it doesn't mean that they're weak. There just needs to be an awful lot more education around awareness and support and legislation. But of course, there can be legislation, but if the organisation or the culture, the people within the organisation think, well, that rule doesn't really apply to us. And don't get me wrong, it was my choice largely to go home and come back in after 4 hours because I had somebody in custody and I needed to deal with it.
Yes.
There needs to be more in place, more support, more actual support that you can go to. And everything going online for the last couple of years might help go towards that, instead of having to go to an office and speak to a counsellor or a therapist or a coach. I know when I was leaving, they started introducing the idea of coaching in the police. So maybe being more open to actually reaching out and getting some support that doesn't make you weak.
Radio Reverb. Shush now, I'm doing a trailer. For the Folkhampton Radio Show, it's every Thursday from 5 p.m. here on Radio Reverb. My name is Chris Thorpe Tracy, and I will play you an hour of folk, trad, psych, great songwriters. There's usually geese too, but don't worry about them. Let me give your ears a treat. Ooh, that sounds a bit weird. So that's Folkhampton, Thursdays, 5 p.m. on the mighty Radio Reverb 97.2. Okay, you can honk now.
There seems to be a lot of companies out there that are now introducing health and well-being programs, or a sort of feeling that health and well-being is actually something that should be spoken about. And it's okay to say to people, actually, I'm struggling at the moment. I'm finding it really difficult. How do you think it's best to bring those things into an organisation? I mean, Helen, you're in leadership, so you know, you're helping leaders. What are you seeing in the work that you're doing?
Well, as I say, those are the sorts of things that I'm seeing in terms of the burnout topic. Is, you know, the late night emails and the blurring between work and home life and the lack of boundaries around that. And then how that's impacting on conversations and conflict and all those sorts of things. And what I'm coaching leaders on is how to put those boundaries in place, how to have those conversations. And so that, you know, you become quite strict with your own energy and you can't, you really manage that as a priority.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, manage energy first and then manage time, because managing your energy and really identifying the things that drain you, the things that don't, what your triggers are, what your Achilles heel tendencies are. So I work with the Hogan psychometric reports, and one of those is the dark side, which is, you know, what are your Achilles heel triggers? And, you know, they're things like a perfectionism. They're things like dutiful behavior, people-pleasing behavior. Mm. And how when you're in a stressful situation, these things get triggered and it's just ingrained in us. We all have them. There's about 12 of them on this particular report I use. And it's really interesting to see what happens and what behavior gets shown, particularly if you have the perfectionistic trigger, because you hold on, you micromanage, you hold on to more things, you take on board more things, you let go of less things,
yeah.
And that then leads to burning out.
Yes.
I mean, it's not just the perfectionist streak that can lead to burnout, but that's just, it's an example of one. So the leaders that I work with, we look at those things first, we look at the root of that. I'm not a psychotherapist, I'm a solution-focused coach. I am trained in, you know, with the British Psychological Society to do psychometric work. But I don't look back into the past. I try to help people figure out, okay, so this is where we're at now. How can we rewire them, those paths in the meadow, retread new paths so that you're doing less of that? Or you're really, really super vigilant of when you're being triggered, what your triggers are, so that you can prevent things earlier on from going.
Yeah. And actually, I think, you know, the underlying message here is that it's about becoming self-aware to recognize when you are starting to climb that ladder for stress, burnout, anxiety. Because often people, they don't even see it until it's too late and something's gone bang. You know, they've hurt themselves, they've got ill, they've shouted at somebody, maybe they've punched somebody.
Well, I say, you know, it can be like a small thing that can, I remember someone saying that, she, you know, she picked up her daughter from school and her daughter had got into a right old a scrap with someone at school, and it was a huge big thing, and that literally was the straw that broke the camel's back for her.
Yeah,
it was that thing, and she exploded in the playground. And then it was like, oh my goodness, what's happened here? Why am I reacting like this? I need to be more resilient to be able to cope with challenges with my daughter.
So
it's things like that. It's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yes. And what we really want people to do is to actually not have to get to the straw to figure out, you know, their way to that field where the straw has been cut. I saw a fabulous cartoon the other day. I can't even remember where it was, but it was a picture of somebody walking along and they picked up a backpack and then they picked something else up, a handbag. And then they picked up a rock and then they picked up something else and then they picked up something else and they were carrying on their journey, trudging along the path, and then they stubbed their toe. And at that point, they broke down and cried.
There we go.
It's that, you know, we carry all this pressure, this worry that people are going to judge us and that we're going to lose our jobs if we don't work hard, and we have to work harder to prove our worth. And actually, it's not necessarily about hard work. It's about working smarter. And I was going to ask both of you, actually, when is hard work? Because hard work can be a good thing. But when is hard work no longer hard work? It's too much. Can you say when that is for you?
I think when you start having the sensations in your body that something isn't right. Maybe your shoulders are tense more often, some headaches, you know, your stomach's not feeling right. And you are starting to miss things maybe, and the sort of a brain foggy type area. Mm-hmm. And questioning yourself, if you're starting to doubt what you're doing, then I think those are all definitely signs that you've gone past hard work. And if you are as we've already mentioned, trying to do everything on your own, and you're just juggling too much, and you might be missing something, you might be dropping something, then if anything, that's actually probably a sign that you've gone too far and that there are things that you could be doing, and you're far better focusing on what you're really good at and passing something on to other people around you.
It's that delegation. Actually, we haven't talked about delegation, but we've talked a little bit about asking for help, but being able to delegate tasks can be challenging, can't it?
Yeah.
I mean, again, a lot of the leaders I work with find that difficult, either because of having the perfectionistic driver inside them and feeling it difficult to let go, because it's not that there's a lack of trust, but it's hard to build trust to delegate. Also not wanting their people to take on board too much so that their people aren't overloaded or overstressed. Yes. So they take that on board themselves. So those are the sort of two main things I see in the reason why people don't delegate. And the first one is actually more difficult to correct, because if you have a strong driver inside you that it has to be the standard is here.
Yes.
And actually that standard's unrealistic for even yourself. So you're always going to be setting unrealistic standards. So to have those standards for other people as well, there's always going to be a shortfall. So it's best to just do it myself.
Yeah. Yes. And that feeling of, well, it'll take them twice as long, so I might as well do it, because I can't afford to wait.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that is one of the fundamental sort of points I see, the main thing I see in leading to burnout, in leading to, you know, being overwhelmed and overstressed and overworked and working all the hours under the sun and then really suffering as a result. It is a huge contributor. So if you can learn how to do that, and trust is the foundation, trusting yourself and trusting others and learning to build that. There's a great Stephen Covey, it was quite a few years ago now, released The Speed of Trust. So it's a really good book and a program as well. And I really recommend that for organizations. There's also The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni.
Yeah.
And trust is the foundational element of that. So, you know, these are the sorts of things that you can look at when you're looking to let go, empower others to run with things and to have autonomy around things. And that then is a win-win situation for you, because you're not doing as much, and them, because they feel autonomous and fulfilled in being stretched and challenged.
The short-term investment in helping them to develop that skill has a long-term impact, because it's something that you can then trust and delegate to them. But in the short term, it's not doing the, I'll do it. And again, it's easy to do with your kids. It's a lot quicker and easier for me to just do that for you than empower you to do it yourself.
It's like Helen says, it's that being able to let go and allow somebody else to make a mistake, even though it might mean you end up having to tidy up the mess. You're empowering that person ultimately to have learned something and to grow. So, you know, that's part of being a good leader, isn't it? Is that you're there to pick up the pieces, but you're empowering that person. You know, the more that you can allow yourself to let go of things, you as an individual can grow as well, because you have more time to be creative. You have more time to focus on different things and what's coming next, as opposed to just taking all those bags and putting them on your shoulders.
Radio Reverb.
97.2.
Radio Reverb.
So, ladies, you know, we've talked about stress, burnout. It's a big thing in the world right now. What would you say are your top tips, or what have been the best things that have helped you and help you on a daily basis or a regular basis, or something that, you know, what is the things that you turn to? What are the things that you turn to when you know that you're getting those little sort of twitches to say, stop, slow down?
Helen, what are your
for me, I if I'm noticing that I'm getting a bit stressed, first thing I do is I'll try some calm breathing to try and relax my nervous system, come out of my stress responses, and to really focus on relaxing and calming my body, and then sit down. And the next stage for me is really about self-awareness, and looking at what I'm doing and what's going on around me. And so the self-awareness, looking at what I'm doing, but also taking a step back so I can see the bigger picture of what's going on. Because if I'm all stressed and just focusing on one thing, then I can't see everything else. So if I'm consciously aware of what I'm doing and really having a bit of an analyse, the debrief as such about, okay, so what's happened, what am I doing, what do I need to do, and then stepping back and
do you actually write those things down? Is that how you, I know for me journaling is a really big thing, and I can, if I've got myself into that place of where I want to take my head off and empty it out, one of the biggest things that I do is I just do a brain dump. I literally get a piece of paper or a book and I don't even think about it. I just let the pen write on the pages and it just comes out of my head.
I like the idea of doing that. I have two toddlers, so I generally don't get the opportunity to do that. So it's mostly in my head.
Yeah.
I'd like to, I'll try.
How about you, Helen?
Just thinking about it, and I think for me it's noticing where how I am being with other people.
Okay.
So I'm quite low on adjustment, which means I wear my heart on my sleeve. I don't sort of hide my emotions. I find it difficult to you know, keep a straight face on my emotions, which means that when I'm stressed it shows. So it's the feedback I get from other people is a sign to just take stock, come back into myself, come back towards myself, take some time in nature. Always for me, time in nature, particularly when the sun is shining, is just such a tonic for me. I go up on the downs and that gives me it really gives me clarity and perspective. Also keeping my exercise routines and my mindset based routines firmly in place and not letting them slip.
Yeah.
And I notice that when I'm not exercising as much as I want to, or I'm not doing those things that actually make me feel more level and balanced, then it's going to slip.
Yeah.
You know? So it's been quite, I have to be quite strict and understand what's making the situation worse. What sort of thing? So last year I stopped drinking booze because I, you know, completely, because I could tell that wasn't making any situation better.
Having a negative impact.
Yeah. So it's just really being very aware of what's contributing to this and how can we, you know, remove the enablers and start to sort of, you know, address the situation.
You're
feeding yourself and your body and your mind, the food, the alcohol, what are you putting in is obviously going to affect what you're getting out. The sort of music you're listening to, what you're watching on TV,
what you're reading.
Are you reading about, you know, terrible things? Are you watching all the terrible things on the news all the time?
Yeah.
Or are you going out and looking at the blue sky and the birds and watching kids running around laughing?
Yeah, and I think it is, I'm the same as you, Helen. Going out into nature is definitely something that helps me always. Physical exercise has always been my number one go-to. But it is that, you know, listening to the robins singing in the tree and seeing the daffodils blooming on the grass and
gratitude.
All of those tiny little things can make a huge difference to how you feel. Sleep, I think, is top priority. Yeah. But the problem is when we get stressed and we get burnt out, sleep can be the one thing that we can't get because our body's running on adrenaline. Have either of you suffered with poor sleep, lack of sleep, difficulty sleeping, or?
I mean, I always have, but, you know, my son still is an atrocious sleeper and he's 6 years old. So, no, it's always just been an issue. But I have never been the best sleeper. I can't lie in. I can't, you know, I find it when, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I can't go back to sleep. No, those sorts of things. But since I started taking these supplements, it's massively improved.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are all these sorts of things. You know, we can, Helen, you talked about your digestive issues that you had with your burnout. So, you know, going to see a nutritionist, going to see a homeopath, maybe looking at some alternative therapies, acupuncture, all the, you know, meditation, yoga, Pilates, moving your body in a way that, when we talk about exercise, quite often people think, oh, I've got to lift weights, I've got to do HIIT exercise, I've got to run as fast as I can. And actually sometimes they can have the detrimental effect on stress. Mm. And it's more about moving and just moving our bodies and not necessarily having to exercise in a way that feels hard.
Tai Chi, Qigong, I quite enjoy doing a bit of Qigong. I used to do jujitsu, which of course is a bit more physical than Qigong. But sport and movement was always one for me. Or actually just jumping on my bike when I could and getting out in the hills. I can't really do it with two toddlers, but
no.
That's quite hard, isn't it? And Helen, for you, music, I know, is one of your go-to, and you've really found that again, haven't you, recently with your DJ?
In lockdown, I used to be a DJ. I used to play vinyl back in the day in the clubs, and then I stopped for a very long time, got back into it in lockdown, and bought a digital controller and taught myself, and it's just been a joyful thing. To when I'm mixing, it's meditative. I don't think about anything else other than the music I'm playing, and I love the music I'm playing. And then I've said yes to any opportunities that have come my way, and that's led to real growth experiences, you know, DJing out again in public places and pushing myself out of my comfort zone. And so it's that joy, following that joy, has just led to so much more.
Yeah.
It's been a real tonic.
So and yes, I think, because you want to, not because you have to. You
felt exactly.
Yeah. And enjoying that. And I remember coaching a lady who used to play the saxophone years ago, and she was in a band and she dyed her hair pink and she loved it. And then for some reason, you know, she'd got a good job, got two children, got into that corporate world and didn't play anymore. Mm. And then one day she turned up and said to me, I got my sax out at the weekend. And the joy on her face and the complete change by bringing that back. And I think sometimes we have to look back at what are the things that we did as kids that we loved to do. Mm. Painting or playing with clay or plasticine or cooking or drawing or making up silly stories and things like that. Bringing those back into your life can bring that joy and reduce those stress levels.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yes, that's a really good point.
In that sense, I'm definitely trying to embody and model my toddlers.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And playing. I think one of the Brighton Festival things that you can go is called adult. I have to be careful because it's called adult play. I'm sure it is, but it's adult play in a playground outside, you know, doing the monkey bars and sliding down slides. And I think that's fab.
No, when it was really cold and wet and my kids wanted me to go to the park and I couldn't think of anything worse, but I would put my hood on and I went and I sat there on the bench being all cold and miserable, and they were like, come join us, mummy. So I was like, all right. So I went on the swings, went on the monkey bars, went on the roundabout. I felt brilliant afterwards.
It's amazing, isn't it? I get the odd urge if I'm out doing some PT on the park, I get the odd urge to do a cartwheel or a handstand. I can still do it at 50. But it's those silly things that you can do. And I guess that's maybe one of the benefits of being able to work from home is that, you know, you can turn off your video on your Zoom thing and just quickly jump up and down and do a silly little dance, which will probably make yourself laugh.
Yes.
Nobody will know. and could reduce your stress levels.
This is a true.
Cheers.
That reminds me of one of the things that I do if I am starting to feel the stress in my body. Is to shake yeah. all over and have a really good shake. What's that song? Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture. I mean, I love that song because it reminds me of wonderful skiing holidays that we had. So, music is fantastic, but actually shaking your body. If you think yes. of a dog after it's had a fight or something like that, or if it's scared, it shakes. Yes. And it's shaking out the tension. It's actually literally shaking the tension out of your body.
Yeah, it's that somatic response, isn't it? It's changing. And I think that's the thing, is that going back to the stop and the pause, all the stop and the pause is doing is just changing that moment so that you are aware of something else. So, Helen, I know that you're now helping people with PTSD and with stress. Tell us what you're actually going to be doing next in your business, because now you work for yourself, you're a coach. So tell us a little bit more about what you do and how can we find you?
That's right. I am running some small events online at the moment. I know I've got a challenge coming up on the 28th of March, I think it is, online to really help people deal with stress and recover from trauma. So that's going to be a free challenge online. So that is Facebook/groups/stress detox. If anyone wants to find me there, or I'm happy for people to connect with me on Facebook. I'm Helen Y. Thompson, if anyone wants to connect.
And it's Thompson with a P, isn't it?
Thompson. Yes, I'm Helen Y. Thompson would
be. Yes. Excellent. So this is Lisa Moore for the Brighton Business Show here on Radio Reverb on 97.2 FM, available to download as a podcast or listen again online. Helen's, and actually I've got middle name as Helen, so it's the three Helens today. Thank you so much for the show. Have either of you got one last top tip for somebody who is perhaps listening to this show thinking, maybe I'm on my way to burnout? What's the one thing that you'd say to them to do right now?
Oh, what's the one thing if someone's struggling now? Breathe. Yeah. Deep breath, slow. Deep breath in, count to say four. Deep breath out, count to say six. As long as the out breath is longer, and that's the first key to reducing your stress response. And then once you're able to do that a few times, and then you can start to look at what practically else you can do around. But the first thing to do, deep breaths.
Deep breath, absolutely. How about you, Helen?
Be super, super kind to yourself. Be kind. Be compassionate towards yourself. Don't beat yourself up about anything. Just listen. Listen to yourself and what you need.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think my top tip would be go out for a walk. Just go out for a walk and look up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing the difference that you feel different when you look up. When we feel sad, down and stressed, we tend to look down, which takes our physicality, our bodies down, and we feel down. When you look up, you feel up, you feel bright, you see the big space above your head. So I think I would definitely say go outside and look up. And that's it. So ladies, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to see you. I hope you enjoy International Women's Day this month and celebrate the amazing women that are out there. And for any stressed out business owners out there, please do listen again to the show and get in touch if any of us can be of help to you. We'll be right back.
Radio Reverb.
Radio Reverb.